I want to welcome my guest for this morning, Tamika Bybee. She is the Director of Financial Aid Services. And I wish, Tamika, that, you know, looking back in time, I had made that first initial conversation with financial aid offices. There was fear that I was going to get a no. There was even a little bit of shame, maybe is what I call it, because I was like, I don't want to go and say that I can't afford to pay for college. You know, I don't want to be looked down because I can't pay for college. There was simply just not knowing, quite honestly. I mean, like, I really did not understand what financial aid was, what financial aid meant. I had heard the term before. And because I was an immigrant, I pretty much disqualified myself in my head. I was like, well, I wasn't born here, so I'm a citizen now, but I don't think I qualify. So, you know, all of these questions that I was just asking myself, I was giving myself the answers, and I was like, I don't qualify. I really just don't think I do. So I want to help answer some of those questions for people who might be watching us today, who might be in that same situation where they're like, I really want to pursue my education. Affordability is one of my issues, so that they don't make the same mistake that I did, so that they don't disqualify themselves, and so that they can actually really move ahead and move forward. So, but before we go there, I really would like to get to know you a little bit better before we dive into those deep subjects of conversation, give hope really to people today. I would like to get to know you and you know, just find out a little bit of your story and how you got to be the Director of Financial Aid Services at ETC. So good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes. So I've been in higher education as a career for almost 20 years now. I actually started out as a part-time employee at Cleveland State University. So I'm from Ohio, from Cleveland, Ohio. And at the time, you know, I was a freshman in college, and I thought, oh, it would be pretty awesome if I could just get a job, you know, including, you know, going to school, because it was just easier at the time. I didn't have a car, so I was commuting. And I was just lucky in that I had a cousin that worked for the FBI, which was like pretty close to Cleveland State. So she would pick me up in the morning and she would drop me off. And so I said, oh, it would be pretty awesome if I could just get a job here on campus. So that way, you know, I won't be doing back and forth and having to find rides. And so I applied for a part-time position in the bursar's office, also known as student accounts or student finance. And so I got the job there. And so that's how I started out in higher education. So I was at Cleveland State in the bursar's office for almost 7 years. After that, I moved on to Cuyahoga Community College, which is in Cleveland, and that's where I transitioned over to financial aid. So I started working in financial aid back in 2007, and I've been working almost in financial aid ever since. I took a detour and worked in the registrar's office for about 3 years at a small private Catholic college, and then came back to financial aid, where I worked at Strayer University. And unfortunately, they shut down all of the campuses in the Midwest, so I was laid off. So I understand how a lot of people are feeling now with, you know, this pandemic and just not knowing, you know, where your next paycheck is gonna come or if you're gonna be able to find another job. But luckily for me, I had built some solid relationships, and they called me back after they laid me off and invited me back and asked me to fill a new position that they had created. And so Strayer relocated me out to the DMV area, and that's how I got out here. So I've been in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area since 2014. After working at Strayer, I moved on to UMGC, where I served as the associate director in financial aid there. And then I went on to Thomas Nelson Community College down in Hampton, Virginia, where I served as their director of financial aid and veteran services. And so from there, I came back up here to Howard, where I'm now at Howard Community College.
You have ample experience, it sounds like. And it sounds like, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I love talking to people about how they started, because it sounds like maybe you didn't necessarily have that idea of exactly where you were going to land, but, you know, life kind of put you in that situation where this is a place that would work for me right now, where I would start, you know, my career, and you made a career out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And I mentioned people trying to switch careers, because many times we find ourselves in that situation where it's like, I just need a job, and we end up taking whatever jobs, and then as life goes on, we realize, well, you know, my passion really is not what I'm doing right now. I've been doing this for so many years, and I like the switch, but I need an education so that I can transition into a new career. And HCC is great for that. You know, HCC is great for those who are just graduating high school and starting their careers, for those who have been in the career world for many years and are looking to transition, for those who maybe love their career and they just want to take, you know, classes that will help them get to that next level, certifications. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many possibilities, and it's affordable. It's affordable. The education at HCC is affordable. And, you know, there's one of those sayings that goes, you get what you pay for. I think that HCC, you know, you're really paying a small amount of money for education compared to what you could pay in other places, but you truly are getting top quality education. So I don't think that applies to HCC, quite honestly.
Yeah, when I started working in higher education, that wasn't my dream career field. I was one of those kids who graduated high school and didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do with my life. And so I thought, well, maybe I want to get into politics, working behind the scenes. I'm not a camera person. I'm pretty introverted. But I thought maybe
you're
I want to work behind
the scenes. You're doing great today.
Thank you. I thought maybe I want to work behind the scenes. And so I got a bachelor's degree in urban affairs with a concentration in management of urban organizations. And it was while working at Cleveland State when I, you know, realized I really like doing this. Like, I like helping students and guiding them. And, you know, I feel like it gives me a sense of purpose that I can help guide somebody to reaching or attaining some of their own personal educational goals, and a goal that, you know, not only serves themselves, but their families as well, but it also serves communities and our economy. So that's essentially how I ended up in higher education and decided to stay. I just really like it. And I like working with students and being able to assist and impart the knowledge that I have from being an administrator, but also being a student and being a recipient of financial aid.
And, you know, I think that probably leads perfectly into our next question, because I'm sure that passion that you just shared with us trickles down onto the goal of the financial aid office at HCC. So I'd love for you to really tell people what the goal is, you know, and I'm sure, as I said, that we're probably just going to listen to your passion again come here in the form of what you're doing and how you're serving our students at HCC.
So our goal in financial aid services is to make sure that our students are armed with the knowledge that they need to make educated decisions on how best to pay for their education. That is our main goal, is to educate. I see so often, you know, having been in education, higher education for 20 years, where people just, they don't know. And like you, you know, they're like, oh, I don't think I'll qualify. And then they don't understand all of the various different aspects that come along with financial aid. It's not just student loans. You know, there are other areas and other types of aid that people may qualify for. So I'm just a strong proponent of educating. I feel like when you arm people with education, then they can make the best educated decisions for themselves and for their families.
I agree with you strongly, and I've always felt that way. You know, I always try to educate people and give them the resources and give information can go and make the decisions that work best for them. Because as you said, I mean, that's if we don't know, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so therefore you can't incorporate that into your life. But when you know, then you can decide whether it's something that's going to work for you or not. Now, you mentioned different options. You said that it's not just loans that are available through the financial aid office. Let's talk about some of the other options that are available to pay for college through the financial aid office at HCC.
So I think what a lot of people may be aware of is a FAFSA. So a FAFSA is an acronym, actually, and that acronym stands for a Free Application for Federal Student Aid. So when a student goes online and they apply for their FAFSA, which you can do by going to www.studentaid.gov. What you're doing is you are completing an application with the Department of Education to determine your eligibility to receive federal funds. So when you complete that FAFSA, essentially what you're doing is when you submit that application, the federal government, the Department of Education, gives us information back. And that information lets us know what they determine you're eligible for. So there are different components to federal student aid. So as I previously talked about, there are loans, which is the federal direct loans. Those federal loans are a little bit different than private student loans in that they have a number of various different benefits that go with them, which, you know, we could probably get into a little bit later, but there are loans that anybody is eligible for if, you know, you are a U.S. citizen, you have a high school diploma or a GED, and those are just some of the basic requirements. Anybody's eligible for those loans. Although at a community college level, we like to take a conservative approach with that. So we want to see other things that you're eligible for that doesn't involve you having to go into debt and having to repay back the money. So aside from student loans, the other federal funds that are available would be Pell Grants. So I think a lot of people are familiar with the Pell Grant. That Pell Grant is awarded based off of what's called a expected family contribution. That is the number that the government, that the Department of Education determines how much your family has to contribute to your education based off of the information, your financial information and your household information that you put on that FAFSA. So there's Pell Grant money. That is a grant. That means that it does not have to be repaid. It is not a loan. And then there's also called a FSCOG, which is a Federal Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant. That again is another federal grant, which is money that does not have to be repaid. If you are eligible for a Pell Grant, then you are eligible for an FSCOG grant. There's also something called Federal Work Study. So when you complete your FAFSA, there's a question on there and it asks, you know, would you be interested in federal work study? If you put yes, it doesn't tie you or obligate you to have to work. So I would encourage people to always put yes to that to that question. But what it does do is open up the door to more funding for you. So what federal work study does is it allows you to go to school, Howard Community College, and you can get a job at Howard Community College under federal work study. And you get a certain amount of money in that grant. And depending on the school, you can get paid out in a lump sum, or you can get paid out weekly or biweekly, or with however the school's payroll goes. At HCC, you get paid out biweekly along with the regular payroll. So that is money, again, that you earn. You do not have to repay. There are some other grants that we don't utilize at HCC just because it's utilized at a four-year institution. So there's a TEACH grant, and that's for students that are going into the teaching profession. As long as they teach, I think for a minimum of 5 years, and they, you know, don't have to pay that back. If they don't, then it converts over to a loan. There's a Iraq and Afghanistan service grant that goes towards students whose parents unfortunately passed away in service to the U.S. military in Iraq or Afghanistan. So there are so many different, you know, types of federal awards that you could possibly receive, and that's just the federal piece. So now there's also private student loans. So the private student loans are for people who, for whatever reason, are not eligible to receive federal student aid. The private student loans would be through a private entity such as a bank or some of the student loan servicers like Sallie Mae. They offer what's called a Sallie Mae Smart Option Loan. You can go through those servicers. They don't carry a lot of the benefits of a regular federal student loan, but they have some comparable items that, you know, compare to a federal student loan. It's not the same, doesn't carry the same benefits. And then, you know, we have scholarships. Scholarships do not have to be repaid. So with Howard Community College, we have an extensive scholarship database with our foundationships, and you can apply for that on our website as well. So with those scholarships, there's a number, a multitude of different scholarships, and they all have different requirements. But when you go ahead and put that your information in and apply, then we'll match you up to, you know, the scholarships that you're eligible for. Again, that does not have to be repaid. So then there's also institutional scholarships, which is what we have with the foundation, but there's private scholarships as well. There are a number of different websites like fastweb.com that you can go to and create a profile, and that profile will match you up with external scholarships from various different companies and foundations. And that's another way that you could possibly get free money where you don't have to go into debt to pay for your education. And then lastly, there are also veterans' educational benefits. So if you are a veteran or your parent was a veteran, you may be eligible to receive some of those benefits. So there's what's called a Chapter 33, which is the post 9/11 GI Bill. So if you served in the military after 9/11, based off the number of years that you served after 9/11, you may be eligible to receive the post 9/11 Chapter 33 GI benefits. And then also for dependents, there's Chapter 35. And then if you have suffered a disability, there's Chapter 31. I could go on and on, but as you can see, there are so many different avenues to receive funds. And also all those avenues, you know, you can pursue don't necessarily mean that you have to go into debt to pay for college.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the different funds, the different loans, the different grants, the scholarships. I am a big supporter and a big believer in scholarships. Mm-hmm. And I was also a recipient of financial aid throughout my entire school career. I received grants, I received loans, and I received scholarships. And I encourage all of the students, because I know that it sounds like it's a lot of information, and it can be, right? But I love what you said. You know, you get the FAFSA, you put all of your information in, and believe it or not, that actually delineates a lot of what you're eligible for. So even mm-hmm. though Tamika just gave us all this information, it sounds like you're going to be filling out applications and applications. That's not necessarily the case. It's like once you fill out that FAFSA, it really delineates and it really gives the Office of Financial Aid a good idea of many of the things that you're eligible for. The scholarships work a little bit different, and Tamika could correct me if I'm wrong, because the scholarships, depending on, there are some, as you were saying, depending on your career, some are need-based, some are mm-hmm. merit-based, mm-hmm. some are, you know, just available depending on the study, the field of study that you're going into, like specific for that field of study. And yes. I mean, there's just so many different opportunities out there that you can really, really minimize, you know, your debt. Mm-hmm. And I've heard of people who did it better than I did and ended up with very little debt when they came out, or really none in a couple of cases, you know, just by doing their diligence, going to the financial aid office and finding out about all of these opportunities to pay for college. So again, don't let money be that deterrent on furthering your education. There really is a lot, and I wasn't even aware of all the different options that you know, Tamika just brought up to us. I was familiar with the main three, but I didn't know that there were so many subcategories mm-hmm. within that as well.
And you know, that's what we're here for, you know, the financial aid services, to help you out, you know, to show you all of the different options that are available to you. And I also neglected to mention there's also state grants. So, you know, we have the Maryland Higher Education Authority, and they are our state grant institution. So they provide our state grants to our students. And with that, you know, you go on their webpage and you submit an application and you can get state grants, which again is money that does not have to be repaid. And most states have state grants. So I used to work for the Virginia Community College System. They have a state grant process as well. So, you know, I would just encourage students to please reach out to us. outside from those traditional routes of financial aid, a lot of people don't realize, but there are also tuition remission or tuition assistance programs through their employers. So I don't know if Starbucks is still doing this, but I know Starbucks was had a very generous tuition assistance plan for their employees. You only had to work 20 hours a week and they would pay for you to go to college. At the time it was with a specific school, but there are so many different employers who will pay for you to go to school. And some of those employers don't require you to be full-time. I know some of the service industry and restaurants, McDonald's, Taco Bell's, like they have all kinds of different programs for their employees, and they don't have to be full-time in order for them to pay for them to go to school. So there are just so many different avenues that they can, you know, pursue. And, you know, here in financial aid services, we want to be able to educate students on that. So we really encourage people when they have those types of questions to reach out to us so that we can, you know, help them as best as we can.
Absolutely. It is important. It is really important. Like I said, I probably was a little late in the game going into financial aid and finding out how to pay for college. And I would have probably finished my career a lot sooner if I had gone and asked those questions instead of giving myself the wrong answers that I thought were the right answers. Mm-hmm. So we talked about filling out the FAFSA. You mentioned the website. Is there a deadline that people need to go and apply for it? Or if somebody doesn't want to apply online, can they come to HEC and apply in person? How does that process work?
So at this point, the FAFSA is it's pretty much an online process. However, there is a process if for whatever reason you cannot apply online or you just don't want to, there's a paper form. It just takes a lot longer for the Department of Ed to get it and to process it and for HCC to receive the information back. You can request those forms and all of that information can be found at studentaid.gov on how to do that. But if, you know, a student needed assistance with completing their FAFSA, obviously we're closed down now, but once we reopen, they can definitely come up to the campus and we have computers set up in our office space so that students can sit down at the computer and they can complete their FAFSA. And we have our frontline counselors that are there and they can step in and assist whenever the student has any questions or they need assistance in completing that.
What are some of the questions that people can expect to find when they're completing a FAFSA? Do they need to have certain type of documents prepared ahead of time, or you know, is this like applying for a mortgage, you know, where you have to have your taxes and things like that?
So it's not quite like applying for a mortgage, but there are some aspects, you know, certainly. I can honestly say, you know, it's become pretty, I don't want to say easy, but it's a lot more easier than what it used to be in applying for a FAFSA. Back in the day when I first went to college, we had paper FAFSAs and we had to fill in the little, you know, squares. But now everything is electronic and, you know, with the FAFSA, it gives you guidance. So it helps you, like if there's a question that you don't quite understand, they have like the little question marks where you can click on it and it explains things a little bit more. But then they also have a number that you can call as well. Say you're not in financial aid services and you're at home and you're like, I don't know what this means. I don't know what a investment farm is. I don't even know if I have one, because that's one of the questions. It'll explain,
you know,
it.
What comes to my mind when you say investment farm is one of those games, you know, where you're farming, is like, that's right. My investment farm. Do I count that one?
Right. And usually what I tell students is if you don't know what it is, then you probably don't worry about it. But some of the questions on there is, you know, it'll ask, obviously, your name, your social security number. That's important to put your social security number because it helps us link your information when it comes into the college to your information that we have on file for you and your application with admission. So it helps us link the information. If you don't have a social security number on file, we won't be able to link you, and it'll just be kind of floating out there until you say something to us for us to go out and retrieve it. So it'll ask that information. If you, so it'll ask your household information. So it'll ask your household size information, like how many people are in your household. It'll also ask for your adjusted gross income. It'll ask how much did you pay in taxes? So it's important that, you know, just to be on the safe side, you have a copy of your tax records with you. It's not necessary. However, it's important to keep it with you because in the FAFSA, there's a tool called the IRS Data Retrieval Tool, or the IRS DRT is what we call it in financial aid. And so what that retrieval tool does is if you put in your information, so the tax file that you form, the tax file form file, your address that you use when you filed your taxes, your name and some other stuff, it will import that information into your FAFSA directly from the IRS. However, the issue with that is some people don't remember. They don't remember, you know, tax form did I file, or what address was I, you know, living at when I filed the taxes. And so if you don't get all that information right, it will not allow the information to be imported in. So that's why I say keep a copy next to you so that way you can make sure you're putting in the information into the FAFSA and the IRS DRT exactly as it shows on your tax form. And then if you do that, it will import that information in and then you don't have to worry about it. So those are some of the questions. It also asks dependency questions. It'll ask, you know, if you've ever received a bachelor's degree. It'll ask if you've ever been in a legal guardianship or have been an unaccompanied youth or home or at risk for being homeless. Have you been in legal guardianship? So things of that, like of that nature, and that determines whether you are independent or dependent. If you are determined to be dependent, then it will ask for your parents' information. If you are determined to be independent, then you do not need your parents' information on the taxes or on your FAFSA.
Great. So it sounds like it's asking for a lot of information, but it sounds like it's pretty self-explanatory and it's easy to complete. For students who might be looking at maybe starting this summer or in the fall, is there a deadline when they need to complete their FAFSA by?
So it's not necessarily a deadline so much as it is, you know, they need to complete it as early as possible because that allows us to award them, you know, as quickly as possible, especially when it comes to awarding institutional aid. Some of that institutional aid is first come, first serve basis. And we use the FAFSA information. So if you apply for your FAFSA late, we may be out of institutional funds. So I would encourage students, once the FAFSA opens on October 1st every year, get online and apply. So for the 2021 academic year, the FAFSA opened last October. So if somebody's going in now and applying, I mean, they'll still get, you know, their regular eligibility and Pell Grant money and SCLG and, you know, if they need to take out student loans, but it's some of the other institutional aid that they may miss out on because we may have already set it aside or awarded it to, you know, other students who already have their information in and they've already completed everything that they need to complete. Also too, I think it's something to consider that just because you submit the FAFSA, it doesn't mean like, okay, I've submitted it and I'm good to go. a lot of times, students will submit a FAFSA and they will be selected for a process called verification. And it's a random process by the Department of Education. They actually randomly select the students for this process called verification. And essentially what that means is, financial aid services, we have to verify that the information that they put on that FAFSA is true and correct. And so depending on the type of verification that it is, we have to request certain documents and information. So we may request a tax return transcript. We may request a student's W-2s. And if they're dependent, we may need their parents' W-2s and their parents' tax return transcripts. And that can, you know, sometimes be a lengthy process. So I would just, you know, say to students, get that FAFSA as soon as it opens up and it's available for you.
Usually, how long does it take, you know, for the FAFSA to go through to be fully processed and for you to know how much money has been awarded to you to pay for your education?
So hypothetically, let's say a student were to complete their FAFSA today and they put in HCC school code, typically we would get that information back within 3 to 4 business days. And let's say hypothetically, everything was clear, they weren't selected for verification, we don't need to collect any documents, then as soon as we get that information, they're pretty much awarded within, again, another like 2 to 3 business days. So from the start of us getting the information in, I would say allow anywhere from probably like 5 to 7 business days for us to get everything processed in the system and for the student to get their actual award notification.
So it's not that lengthy of a process if everything goes right and everything.
Right, and again, I just need to reiterate, that's if there are no documents that we need to collect from the student if they're not selected for verification. So I don't want to set that expectation like, oh, well, she said, you know, I didn't, as soon as you get it, you know, in a week, I should, no, that's not, that's right, only right. If, you know, there aren't any other documents that we need to collect.
We're talking ideal here. That's what we're talking about here. Okay, great. So we kind of know how the process works. We know how to fill out the FAFSA. You've mentioned a couple times, you know, the institutional money. And I know that HCC has an educational foundation. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think it's important for people to know that there is, you know, money is set aside at HCC to help our students pay for their careers.
Mm-hmm. So we do have a foundation, and that foundation, they basically help us in, like you said, setting aside extra money for students to be able to afford to go to college. It's a combination of various different scholarships and grants that we offer to students. So all of the foundational money, it's all grants and scholarships. It is not loans. We do have with the scholarships donors, where they actually, you know, they donate this money for a specific scholarship, which is why sometimes we'll have all these various different scholarships, but they have different requirements. It's because the donor sets what the requirements are for a student to receive those scholarships. And then we just have the regular institutional grants, where we automatically will award those to students based off of a set of criteria that we have in place. So for instance, like if the student is at least half-time enrolled, which is 6 credit hours or more, if they're carrying at least a 2.0 GPA, you know, those are some of the various different criteria that we have in place. If they are in good SAP standing, we will automatically award some of those funds to students, so they don't necessarily have to actually apply for that. We also have summer funding as well for part-time enrollment. And again, this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier with students applying for their FAFSA as soon as possible, because with this money, we automatically award it, at least for the grants, not the scholarships. The students have to actually fill out the scholarship application for that. But with the grant money, we automatically award it, but it's first come, first served basis. So if we don't have your information in and then we start awarding all of the funds out, by the time you put your application in, we may be out of funds.
Now you mentioned, you know, some of these are available for students who are part-time, full-time, mm-hmm. But as we know, life changes. I think, you know, mm-hmm. COVID was the biggest example of that, right, of how quickly life can change. And if for some reason, you know, a student enrolls as maybe full-time or part-time with, you know, within the requirements of whatever loan or Pell Grant or just scholarship they've applied for, and something comes up and they have to drop some of the class, change their status and go from maybe full-time to part-time or drop a class, or, you know, just life comes their way as it usually does and they have to switch their plans. How does that affect, you know, financial aid? How does that affect grants? How does that affect scholarships?
So it does actually have an impact if you need to drop or withdraw. So with federal student aid, there is something called a return to Title IV process. And so what that means is essentially when you receive federal aid, that federal aid is called Title IV funding. And so the Department of Education, when they give you this funding, they expect for you to actually earn it. So it's not free and clear. There's a catch to it. So you have to actually earn it. And so according to the Department of Education standards, when they basically say you have to earn these funds, basically what they're saying is you have to have completed at least 60% of your courses in order to keep your funds, provided you need to withdraw for any reason. So let's say a student is enrolled, let's say they're enrolled half time, they're eligible for federal assistance. And like you said, life comes at them fast and they have to withdraw from their classes. So if they withdraw from all of their classes, then we are required in financial aid services to review their account for return of Title IV. So once we do that review, we are determining, did the student complete 60% of their classes? If the student did not complete at least 60%, then unfortunately we have to proceed with a return of Title IV calculation. So when we do that calculation, what we are determining is how much aid did the student earn and how much of the aid was unearned. And when we determine the unearned amount, we send that back to the Department of Education. And in turn, the student may owe us HTC money back, particularly if they received a refund. So that's how withdrawing from your classes may impact you if you've received federal financial aid assistance. I would encourage students, again, if they need to withdraw, to reach out to financial aid services. And we're here and we will answer your questions, particularly if you want to know, you know, how withdrawing may possibly impact you in your federal funding.
Absolutely. It's important to have those conversations. And it's important to understand too that, you know, just because you received that help, there were certain criteria that you had to meet to be able to obtain it. So it's important to just have that awareness and know that, I mean, we understand, you know, we're all humans. Life is life and it's unexpected. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the beauty and the challenge of it. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, and it's okay. It's okay to have those situations come up. It's okay mm-hmm. to, you know, switch gears in the middle of, for whatever reason, but just do yourself a favor and contact the financial aid office, contact the right people so they can guide you so that you don't have repercussions later down the road. That's mm-hmm. really what this is all about. It's trying to avoid things, unexpected things coming down mm-hmm. your way later just because you didn't ask the questions. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely. But I just also want to say, I would also encourage students to speak to their instructors because depending on where they are in the semester, like if they've completed so much of the course, and you know, something just happens and they're just like, I can't finish this. It may be beneficial for them to instead take an incomplete, especially if the doctor's willing to work with them. I would rather a student take an incomplete versus just completely withdraw if they completed so much of the course and they only have like a few things left, you know, that needs to be done in order for them to fully complete the class and pass it. So in addition to reaching out to financial aid services, I definitely would encourage students to reach out to their instructors if they're having any kind of difficult time with their class and they feel like they may need to withdraw.
Absolutely. Having those conversations really, you know, I think that I mentioned at the beginning, part of the reasons why I didn't go to the financial aid office was shame, was, you know, fear, was mm-hmm. just my own answers to my own questions. And I've learned through those experiences and many others that I've encountered in life that we make stories bigger and maybe more worrisome in our own heads than what they really mm-hmm. are. And when we approach people and we talk to people, especially, you know, to your teachers, I mean, your teachers at HCC, every teacher that I ever had at HEC, if I had any type of issues, if I had any type of situations that I thought, oh my God, you know, they're going to be like, no, you're a student. Like I had this impression, like there's going to be walls all over. I actually found myself finding open doors, you know, and bridges. Like many times my teachers would come up with solutions. They'd be like, okay, so if you're going through the situation right now, how long is it going to take you to get through that? Because I'm willing to wait for you, and, you know, we can work something out. If you need to absent yourself for a couple of weeks, when you come back, just be ready to work really, really hard, you know, and you will be able to catch up on your work. I mean, really, it's and that's one of the beautiful things about HEC that I found as a student, and I continue to find as an employee, is that we're looked at as humans, you know, we're looked at as a whole person, and we understand that there's situations, that there's life, that we are more than just the student sitting, you know, and furthering their career, that there's a lot more things around that student. I'm more than the person who works at the radio station. I am a mom, I am a wife, I am a daughter, I am a sister, I am a friend, you know, I'm all of these other things. And HEC really looks at me that way. And HEC is willing and ready to support me in all of those aspects of my life. And it was true also when I was a student at HEC, my teachers also looked at me in that way, and they were ready, willing, and able to really support me so that I could succeed and so that I could complete my career. So I love that you brought that up, Tamika, and I thank you really for reminding me of, you know, just how special HEC is in that sense, where those relationships really start from the teachers to the students, from everybody who works at HEC amongst, you know, the employees and the students, staff themselves, everybody really just wants, we're all in this to try to help our students further their careers and get to where they want to be.
Exactly. And I think, you know, for me personally, like I've had those life experiences where, you know, something just comes from complete left field that I wasn't expecting. And I found myself struggling. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish this. I don't know if I can do it. So I completely empathize. Like, I understand what it's like. I was there. I was a student. You know, I like you, you know, I'm a sister. You know, I'm a niece. I'm, you know, somebody's child. So I have family members. You know, and we all have had those life experiences, and, you know, I always keep that in the forefront of my mind when I'm helping and assisting students, because I understand, I know what it's like.
Absolutely. So right now we are still working from home. We are still, you know, not back in campus, but we are very much open. We're working. So if students have questions, if they want to start up the process and they want to just maybe find the school code, they don't know where to go and find the school code. You've mentioned it a couple of times. Or as they're completing their FAFSA, they've reached out to the FAFSA, they've looked on the question mark that you mentioned on the actual form, but they still have questions. They still have other doubts that they would like to talk to you, or they simply just would rather come directly to HEC because that's the school of their choice to start their education. How can they get in touch with you guys, and how can you guys assist? How are you guys working in these remote times?
So students can always get in contact with us. We have a email that we utilize, which is FinAide, that's FINAIDE at howardcc.edu. And you can always email us there any questions that you may have. Obviously, since, you know, we're remote and everybody's emailing, we have a big influx of email. So, you know, I promise that we're working through them as quickly as we possibly can. So there may be a lag of maybe a couple of days before you hear from us, depending on how many emails we have in our inbox, but we are working through literally hundreds, with an S, hundreds of emails daily, you know, just, you know, trying to provide, you know, the best possible customer service to our students. And then we're still offering virtual counseling as well. So you can reach out to us via that email. And if you want virtual counseling, you can request that, and we will put that on our schedule, and we will host a Zoom virtual counseling session with you if you need that as well.
So it continues to be personalized service. The, you know, the financial aid office at HEC continues to be open and ready to just help you answer any questions that you may have. having gone through it, I know that it can feel overwhelming. I know that when I was looking at those forms, just like you said, you know, there were some questions on there that I was almost translating verbatim in my mind, and I was like making absolutely no sense of it. But that actually reminds me of another question that I wanted to ask you before we close our conversation today. We've mentioned that many of these grants and many of these loans are available for U.S. citizens, but I know that we have international students. I know that we have other type of students as well with visas and, you know, other type of immigration statuses. Are there different options for those students as well? Is there help for students who might not be necessarily from this country, who might be on student visas, who might have a green card or other type of immigration status?
Definitely. So if they're not eligible for federal aid, they can definitely still apply for foundational money, the scholarships that we have. That doesn't necessarily meet the requirement is not necessarily that you have to be a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident. So they can definitely do that. And again, like I said, they can also apply for external scholarships because those have varying different requirements, and it's not necessarily one of the requirements that you have to be a U.S. citizen.
So reach out, you know, whatever your situation is, whatever you are today, don't give yourself the answers that you think you know, because you might make the same mistake that I did and end up either prolonging your career more than you have to, paying more out of pocket than you have to, mm-hmm. just because you didn't go and knock on the door early enough in your career and find out the answers, the real answers to the questions, mm-hmm. because I know I was giving myself all sorts of answers. They were all the wrong, you know, the wrong answers to the questions. And I found later that I could have finished my career faster, that I didn't have to pay so much out of pocket as I did. And I would still probably had ended up maybe with even less debt that what I have today, just because, you know, I would have had the guidance, the right guidance from somebody at the financial aid office. Is there anything else, Tamika, that you would like to add today before we wrap our conversation up?
I just want to take a minute just to quickly talk to students about student loan debt and the repercussions and the seriousness of it. I know, you know, when you are in school and you have all of these various different needs, it's real easy to just go ahead and sign that master promissory note, complete that loan entrance counseling, and get those funds. But again, I'm a recipient of financial aid and student loans, and having so much debt over my head when I graduated, because I have a bachelor's degree and an MBA. And, you know, while I utilized, you know, student loans to finance my MBA, I only took out what I needed for the cost of the program. I did not take out any extra. I still have a lot of student loan debt. And just to put things into perspective for our students, our student loan debt as a country is over $1 trillion. It has outpaced credit card debt, mortgages. And wow. I'm of the opinion that it is a crisis, because that has a lasting impact on our economy. Because what that does is, and what people are not necessarily who are credit savvy aware of, what it does is, it impedes the economy through students purchasing homes and putting more money out there into the economy and buying things, because they're taking all their money and they're paying back, you know, the student loan debt. And I can attest to it, because when I purchased my house, my purchasing power was stymied. I could only get financed for so much because of my student loan debt. So I didn't get like the house of my dreams. I didn't get, you know, the amount that I really wanted to afford the house that I really wanted because of my student loan debt. So I would just really encourage students, again, to reach out to financial aid services, because there are so many different ways and so many different things that you can do to cut costs. When I was in college, I used to go to my local library to look for my textbooks. Sometimes they would have the text, but it would be an older edition. I would reach out to my instructor and ask, hey, can I use, you know, this 15th edition? I know you're looking for a 17th edition. And they would say, oh yeah, there's really not a whole lot of a difference, except some of the chapters are changed up. You know, I would rent my textbooks instead of buying textbooks that were not in my major. So for my general education courses, I would rent. I rented through a company online, but there's various different companies, you know, Barnes & Noble, Chegg, Amazon, and you can look at all of those different rates. And that saves you a whole lot of money just renting some of those textbooks that are not in your major. You know, again, like I stated, employers, look for various different employers who are willing to work around your schedule, but will offer tuition assistance. Just don't get caught in that student loan debt trap. And for students who are going that route, just remember when you're ready to graduate, if you want to talk through what you can look forward to after you graduate, make that appointment with us in Financial Aid Services. We will go over your student loan history with you. We will pull your NSLDS record and show you how much you have taken out in student loans. We will go over your benefits that you have, such as in-school deferment benefits, forbearance benefits, if you can afford to make your student loan payments, because what we don't want you to do is default. When you default, then the government, they're still going to collect their money and they're going to garnish your wages and put liens on your properties and so on and so forth. And it's going to really hurt your credit score. So we will go over all of that with you and we will help you out. Even if you are a graduate and you found yourself in a situation where you have defaulted, reach out to us. We can help you and we can give you some different tips to get out of default, such as consolidation or loan rehab. So there are so many different avenues and so many different things that, you know, Financial Aid Services can help with. Just please don't be afraid and don't be ashamed. And, you know, all of those different things, like put that out the window, call us, you know, we want to help you. We're here to help.
Absolutely. It's a lifeline that is out there. And, you know, you mentioned purchasing books and only taking what you need. I know that part of the way that I did once I started figuring out how the financial aid world really worked is like my scholarships, I would use that money to purchase the books, right? And, you know, I would apply for scholarships even if they were like $200 or $300, mm-hmm. because sometimes those books, one book would cost me $200. So I was like, okay, yes. This is going to cover for that, you know? So be wise. And mm-hmm. I know that when we're young and I know that when we don't have a whole lot of responsibilities, I mean, we have money in our pockets and, you know, we might use it for other things that are not so important, but it can come back and it can really hurt you in the long mm-hmm. run. So talk to somebody like Tamika, talk to somebody at the financial aid who can really guide you, who can really help you look at that bigger picture, you know. Definitely. Start thinking about the future, start thinking about when you graduate and how all of those decisions that we make today can and will definitely affect us later. And I love what you said, and I love that you opened up the opportunity for even those who have graduated. And, you know, maybe at the beginning you were paying, you were doing fine. I mean, right now, I could imagine that many people maybe lost their jobs or, you know, are not sure, and then they have these loans. And I know that the government is helping out right now, mm-hmm. but we do need to think of, okay, what's going to happen with COVID, you know, becomes normalized. And some of this helps that have been extended right now because of the circumstances that we're in go away, right? It's mm-hmm. important to start planning for that, not just stay where we are, but really looking at the future and saying, okay, I know my student loan, maybe right now it's on hold, or I know right now they're not, you know, they're not really, they put me in a forbearance plan, I talked to the loan servicer and they said, okay, we're going to give you a break for the next whatever months, right? Well, what's going to happen after that? You know, did you lose your right. job? Are you going to be able to start paying again when that payment comes back up? If not, you know, contact the financial aid office, talk to them about different options, different things so that you can protect yourself, protect your family, protect your future, and continue to move forward, because education really never stops, right? Maybe formal education does stop at some point, but educating ourselves, you know, talking to the right people, that should never stop, and that continues to empower us. So continue to be empowered, continue to have those conversations, reach out to the financial aid office, finaid@howardcc.edu is the email where you can get in touch with them right now. Tamika, thank you so very much for all this information. Thank you for being so kind. And, you know, I think that what I loved about our conversation today and what I'm taking with me today is that, yes, we're talking about money. Yes, we're talking about loans. But at the end of the day, we're really talking about the person. They were looking at the person as a whole and saying, okay, if you need the financial assistance right now, that's great. There's no shame. There's no problem. We are here to help, but let's make it in a way that really will set you up for success. Exactly. So I think that really, you know, it speaks to the heart of HEC, where it's not that just that we want students to come and enroll because we care about the numbers. It's because we care about the students. It's because we really mm-hmm. understand that education is important. Education is expensive in this country, and we don't want those to collide against each other. We actually want to make sure that you come, you get quality education, find the best ways to afford it so that it sets you up in the right path. So that after you graduate, as Tamika was saying, hopefully you find yourself in a better place than Tamika and myself found ourselves when we graduated and we learned the hard way.
Right.
Tamika, thank you so much for our for your conversation today, for all the information that you provided us with. I really appreciate it. And thank you everybody for listening and for watching. Please share this information with everybody who is looking for answers on how to afford school.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.